Mid-mornings with Lee Chambers. Cambridge
105. Sitting in front of me is, I've been calling you Jodie Palfrey all morning, and you said that's your maiden name. Your actual name, the name you want to be known by, is Jodie Deacon.
Yeah, that's right.
Apologies for that. I've got Jodie Deacon in front of me. Jodie, this Saturday, you're going up Snowdonia.
I am indeed, yes, with the husband.
The husband, uh-huh. Right. This is going to be a real test of your marriage, isn't it?
It is.
Because you're doing this overnight, is that right?
Yeah, we start on Saturday evening and hopefully finish on Sunday morning, so from dusk till dawn.
Wow, and how long are you expecting it to take then?
There are some guidelines that it may take 6.5 hours, but I think that's, that's a guideline for everyone. So some people finish quicker. I don't know when I'll finish.
Well, we all know Snowdonia is a mountain. Exactly. Do you know exactly how high it is?
From what I've read, it's 21 kilometres high. So I don't know what that is in real money.
21 kilometres, I think that's about 12 or 13 miles. And the terrain, is it steep?
It says rugged.
Yeah, that's a nice little euphemism, isn't it?
It is.
And why are you doing it overnight?
I just think it's obviously something that makes it slightly more challenging, a bit more iconic, I suppose. So to try and get fundraisers interested in doing it, it makes the task a bit tougher. So I suppose you're working a bit harder for the donations.
And you're going to have one of those lights presumably fixed to
your head.
Yes, yep. like a miner's light, so you can see where
that's
you're going.
Yeah.
Well, it would be lovely, I suppose, as you're coming down. You'll see you'll see the sunset as you're going up and the sunrise as you're coming down.
That's
is that the
right.
idea?
That's the hope. So it would be slightly romantic as well. So
yes, if you've not killed each other by then. Uh-huh. So hurry up. Yes. So have you been doing training for this?
We have. We've been going up the Gog Magog Hill, if anybody knows that. The only hill near Fulbrook.
It's hard to train for hills, isn't it in
is.
Cambridge? Yeah.
Yes, it is. But we've recently bought ourselves a puppy, a little terrier. So he's been dragging us, along for long walks. So he's been really useful.
He's not going up Snowdonia, is he?
No, he's not. He's a bit too young and a bit too much like a rocket.
Yes, he'd be waiting for you at the top.
Yeah.
And you're doing this for a good cause. Your aim is to raise £700 for the NSPCC.
Yeah, that's right.
Why the NSPCC?
I've always admired the work that they do. They're obviously there to provide a listening ear for children who are actually in need. But they also look at the root causes of abuse and try and focus on solutions. So I think, it's a two-pronged approach, and I think it's just really worthwhile to do something like this for them.
And you're doing this all off your own bat, aren't you? This isn't part of a kind of, it's not one of those Three Peaks organised trials or like the long walk that I did, which a couple of years ago, which was organised by Oxfam. This is, you have totally organised this yourself.
Well, I've registered to the NSPCC who have organised the walk, and there should hopefully be quite a few people. So it will,
Oh, that would be nice if you do. Yes, if you do have company.
Yeah, hopefully.
Right, Mark Hickford has texted. Thank you, Mark. There's always somebody who knows the facts. Snowdon is 1,085 metres. Yes, do you want to know this? 3,560 feet.
Right.
So that's just up.
It is
and
indeed.
And then down. Actually, going down a hill, that can take its toll on different parts of your body, can't it? I mean, it's your knees, presumably, you need to be in good shape going up and down.
Yes, that's right. And I suffer from Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective joint issue. So going down for me is actually the thing that I'm most apprehensive of. But, that's why I have the husband there. So.
Oh, yes. Does he know this?
Yes, he knows that.
And you've got walking sticks as well. Yes,
we've got walking poles, walking boots, hopefully all be well kitted out.
Good, I'm pleased to hear it. And you're aiming to raise £700. How much have you raised so far?
So far we're halfway through our target, and the good people of the village that we live in, Fulbourne, they've dug deep in their pockets. And I did do a charity fundraiser where people donated on the evening as well, and every day I seem to have a new email to say that someone's donated, which is great. Some people donate quite a lot of money, some people donate just £2 or £3, which is all brilliant. So that's the aim of today, really, just trying.
And this fundraiser that you did, this was you singing, is this right? This
it
you're performing.
Was, yes.
You were a singer.
Of sorts, yes. Yes, covers band. We sang at the Fulbourne Institute, or the Fulbourne Centre, actually, way back in April. So we made, I think, about £200 from that, which was really good.
So. Okay, well done. That's brilliant. So it's all happening on Saturday. What are you doing then between now and Saturday? Are you sort of mentally going into the zone?
Yes, getting nervous is what I'm doing between now and then. Booking our accommodation because we were quite late doing that. And obviously it's all a bit mad around Snowdonia at the moment for accommodation. Checking our torches work. Definitely.
Yes, definitely need that. Yeah, packing up all your protein bars as well.
That's right. Yeah, lots of pumpkin seeds and sunflower.
So. And is this weather dependent, Jodie? What happens if there's rain and snow? You're still going to go?
That's it. You go up.
Well, oh, well, good luck with that. I mean, it sounds fantastic. And raising £700 for the NSPCC, brilliant. Brilliant as well. If people are listening, we want to donate, how can we do that?
Well, I do have a public Facebook page. So if people want to punch into Facebook, Jodie, that's J-O-D-Y, Deacon, D-E-A-C-O-N, you should be able to find the event page there. Or if you simply want to donate to the NSPCC, if you just go to their website, .org.uk, I think, then, you know, people can donate some cash there. That would be great.
And when you come back down on Sunday morning, triumphant and still married, let's hope, how are you going to celebrate? A big full English breakfast, I'm imagining.
Yes, an absolutely massive fry-up.
I think you would deserve it after that. Well, good luck. So that's set this Saturday. You're going up Snowdonia. And if people want to donate towards the NSPCC, go to the NSPCC Direct or to your Facebook page, Jodie Deacon. Oh, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, do let us know how you get on.
I will, yes,
because,
thank you.
Because fundraisers often come in, they say they're going to do these amazing things, then we never hear from them again. What happened? So, yeah, do let us know. I'm sure we'd love to find out just how you did.
Thank you very much, Lee.
Mid-mornings with Lee Chambers. Cambridge 105.
My second lot of guests of the day have arrived. I've got Flora Wilson-Brown in front of me and John Chisholm from Babylon Theatre. Babylon Theatre, apologies. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Nice to have you here. Now, you're here because your play, The Frantic Canticles of Little Brother Fish, is a one-night-only performance at Hills Rose Theatre this Thursday. Now, I have managed to say it correctly all day, The Frantic Canticles of Little Brother Fish. It's an intriguing title. Yeah. What the devil is it about?
Well, it's about this small fictional country in Central Europe called Depravia, and it's about a boy called Fish and his goat, and they go on a quest.
But what's it really about? Depravia suggests it's... Is it satirical?
Ooh. It's funny. It is a funny play. I'm not sure we're satirising anything. I think it's just quite a gentle comedy.
Mm. And tell me about Babylon, because this was you're all Hills Road sixth form students, is that right?
Yep. Just left.
So we've just finished upper six, and Babylon, the company, has been going for about, is it 10 years now?
Yeah.
So each year they take a new cast of Hills Road students who have just left, and they put on a production, they devise it in 3 weeks, and then they take it up to Edinburgh. So it's quite a...
It's an intense process,
but you get something really good out of it.
Yes.
So when you devise something, how does that work? Do you go in with an idea, or do you just muck about and see what happens?
Well, Richard Freeman, who wrote it and is head of drama, and the two directors that we have, Al Scott and Tom Penn, they kind of come in with some ideas of where it might be going, and they kind of chuck us the ideas, and we kind of have a play.
Bit of like an improvise and stuff. So the first week we kind of do a lot of improvisation games and kind of see what we really want this to be about, and then it turns into more kind of controlled improvisations.
Yeah,
then,
so they'll give us a prompt or a bit of script, and then we'll run with it in the second week.
Yeah.
And then does it actually become a script, a proper written
script? Yeah, yeah. It gets kind of written as it goes along. So like Richard was in the room with us and kind of just writing down everything that was kind of happening, and and it kind of ended up being this... it's evolving kind of script, and then on the third week we kind of had this script down.
Real script, yeah.
It was a real thing, so that was really nice.
And to go to Edinburgh, what a fantastic experience. Is this your first time, both of you?
My first time with the show, it was amazing.
It's really, really lovely.
I mean, it's just such a buzzy place during August because of the festival. Did you manage to see much yourself?
Yeah, we saw so many shows. Yeah. But there's so much you can't see everything. But we did. We made the most of it.
Yeah, some like really kind of nice little kind of gems.
And you won the Fringe Review Outstanding Award.
That was amazing.
It was a bit of a shock, really.
Well done. That's brilliant.
Thank
and had rave reviews from newspapers as well.
People said some lovely stuff.
Yeah, that was all really kind of bit unexpected, really. But the Babylon Company have been around for, as we said, 10 years. So they've got a bit of a reputation. But obviously, us being a new cast, it was a really quite a shock. But the guys who we work with are really, really just inspiring. So that was really, really lovely
to work with them.
Get that award.
And how did you do for audiences? Because it's very competitive up there, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed.
I don't think we had any really tiny, tiny ones. We did a lot of flyering.
Yeah.
In the day, we worked quite hard.
Yeah. If you kind of work harder, we kind of got. You get bigger audiences, obviously. You kind of get out of it what you put into it, and by the end of the week we had like nearly a full house on the last show, which was just a lovely show to end with.
And what was your capacity? So how many were you talking for nearly a full house?
I think it was about 90. Yeah.
Well done. And so what's your roles within the theatre company or within the play? You're both actors?
Yeah. Well, I play the boy Fish, which is
okay,
bit of a conundrum, but and John plays...
I play Cosley the goat, which is Flora's sidekick / pet.
Best friend.
So it's really a really wacky show.
Yeah.
People really need to come and see this show, don't they?
It's a hard one to explain.
I love the pictures, but it looks a lot of fun. Is it quite physical?
There's a lot of ensemble physically. There's a lot of physical comedy, I think, and lots of physical movement sequences.
Yeah.
And what about you now? You've left sixth form, you've been to Edinburgh with this. What are your ambitions?
Well, some of us are going on to do more kind of drama theatre based stuff. Like I'm going to uni to do theatre, and Flora's doing some theatre work outside of whilst taking a gap year. Some of the other cast members are kind of just they just really want to do it, and then they're going off to do different degrees or something, like so
academic stuff. And
so it's really just a nice way to kind of end our years at like Hills Road.
But do you want to stay working in theatre in some way?
Oh, definitely.
I'd say most of us are aiming for that.
Yes, it's such a competitive business, isn't it?
But I think it was a very kind of professional atmosphere in the rehearsal room, and when we were up there, it didn't feel like a school show. It felt like we were really being prepared for the actual world of theatre.
Yeah.
So what did you learn by there must have been so much you learned by devising a play and then taking it up to Edinburgh. You must have learned so much about the actual process and about yourselves.
Yeah.
I think we kind of learned how to... team working skills, how to work with the cast and everything. It was how to come up with ideas, and I think the main thing was in Edinburgh that was a real learning curve, like selling the show and flyering and kind of being really enthusiastic about what you're doing and believing that what you're doing is really kind of worthwhile. And
I suppose there is a kick as well when you go to Edinburgh that maybe up until that point it's mainly been seen by your friends and family.
That was
really, really exciting, having like a whole room of people that you never met before, and maybe they'd only seen you on the mile like singing a bit of a song or just in costume, and they'd come to see your show. That was quite incredible.
Yeah, and it was nice having people who we'd never know, like complete strangers from the street, come see the show and really love it, and they're not saying it because they're our family and they kind of obviously they have to.
The reviews, to be honest, the reviews speak for themselves, and winning that award, I mean, that's just a great thing to take forward.
Yeah, it was amazing. And we had quite a few people come up to us over the course of the week and say that they'd really enjoyed it just when we were out flyering, and that they'd told their friends to come and see it, and that was amazing.
Brilliant. So this performance on Thursday, is this going to be the last one then?
It's quite sad.
Oh, and it's at Hills Road, so it's quite a bit emotional as well.
Yeah, home turf, I guess.
And who's coming? This is open to anyone.
Anyone
can come to the Thursday show.
Now it is kind of the family who didn't get to see it, kind of in Edinburgh, who didn't come up, and some of our old school friends, and some of the new Hills Road students who go on to become Babylon cast members themselves in the future.
And has it evolved? If you'd seen it before it went to Edinburgh and on the way back, has it changed?
It definitely changed so much from the start of the third week to the end of the third week.
Yeah.
And even whilst we were in Edinburgh, we were making small changes.
I think it tightens up, I think, slowly.
Yeah,
like,
it's a much
the more
show.
We ran it in front of audiences, the more we knew kind of what worked and which moments to kind of play up and stuff. So I think, yeah, it definitely got tighter as the week went along. So on Thursday, it should be a real tight, really good show. Just a real laugh.
And your last one, so yeah, you're going to give it all you've got.
We're going to give it everything.
Well, good luck. If you want to buy tickets for the show, I believe there are still seats available, though it's selling out quickly. But
yeah, it's selling fast. But it's
I'm not surprised.
About 40 tickets, no, 30 maybe left. Yeah. So
30 left, yeah. Right. So get on the phone quickly. It's Cambridge 278049. That's 278049. It's a Cambridge number. It's the Hills Road Sixth Form College number, I think.
Yeah,
so yes, if you didn't catch that, then just phone Hills Road Sixth Form College and you can get through to the person who will sell you tickets. It's got a great reputation for drama, Hills Road Sixth Form College,
yeah,
isn't it? It must be great to be part of that.
Yeah, it is amazing. And we were just thinking the other day, like when we'd first come to Hills Road, we obviously saw the Last Babylon show and we were thinking, wow, like we'll never be that good. And then it's just really exciting to think that the people coming up now will get to see our show.
And it's, for both of you, has drama always been something that you wanted to follow, pursue?
Yeah, pretty much forever.
Yeah, from quite a young age, I think.
Well, well done. I mean, I think it's amazing that you had such fantastic reviews in Edinburgh, and even just to go up at that age and experience that, fantastic. So that, if people are interested in going, it's The Frantic Canticles of Little Brother Fish, which is Babylon Theatre at Hills Road Theatre this Thursday at 8 o'clock, and the number to call is 278049. Well, break a leg, as they say, for Thursday. and good luck with all your future projects.
This is Julian Clover.
Community radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
Becky Hawker and Mo Child, they're here from the Cherry Hinton Festival, which gets underway on Saturday. At least the main event is Saturday, isn't it?
Right.
Hello and good morning to you both. Look, tell me a little bit about yourselves. Are you both, I'm assuming you're both Cherry Hinton residents?
Yes, Mo Child, I'm a resident at the moment. I've been there since 1993.
Okay, well, what brought you to Cherry Hinton in the first place?
Well, I was actually living the other side of the allotments in St Bede's Gardens.
Oh, okay.
Sort of came into Cherry Hinton and realised it had got a lot of the things I wanted, and I happened to get married, and we decided we'd get a house then.
Okay, that sounds a good plan. Becky, what about you?
So I currently am a Fulbourn resident, so not strictly in Cherry Hinton at the moment, but I haven't fallen far from my roots. I moved to Cambridge when I was 7 and lived in Cherry Hinton, went to school at Colville and then at Netherhall, and had a short stint away at university before coming back and settling back in Cherry Hinton, just down the road from Mo. And my children are at school in Cherry Hinton now, but now I live in Fulbourn, so I'm kind of Cherry Hinton born and bred, really.
Yeah, the place kind of pulls you back, really, doesn't it,
yeah,
I think, if,
exactly.
If you stray away for too long. It's 30 years.
Yes, it's 30 years since a group of people got together in Cherry Hinton. Apparently, the community school was built, and part of the remit of the head was to make better community spirit. And we also had a community development officer then, who put a lot of time in. And so they got a group of people together, including John Woodhouse, who you know has been mayor of Cambridge two or three times.
Now, I recognise the name, because he's coming on Saturday, isn't he?
He's one of the people who's going to be there with their very own Rob Dryden, of course, Cherry Hinton councillor, to open the festival.
Local hero, three times mayor.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we were all there with Rob yesterday, from people who had actually organised the festival in the first year, right through to this year's, to have tea with Rob in the mayor's parlour.
Oh,
which
that's
is
very
brilliant.
Nice.
Which is brilliant. Back in 1984, these people got together, decided the best way to get community spirit was to have a festival. And it goes back to the feast, when people used to all get together, and apparently it got a bit drunk, the feast.
Well, how long ago are we talking?
In 1939 it stopped.
Right,
the feast
okay.
stopped because of the Second World
yeah,
War.
Yeah, I guess so,
But
yes.
they'd had something every year, and about harvest festival time, because we were, of course, an agricultural village. in 1985, they decided to have the festival, but this time it would be, they would still have a procession led by a goat, would you believe? They always had a goat.
A goat. Where do you go? Actually, there are goats around, aren't they? I always see some around Barton each time I go up that way. So I guess there's a supply and show in Hinton as well.
Well, they were. And so they had a goat to lead the... and also a steam engine, because I think Pamplins in Cherry Hinton were there and they used to make steam engines. And so we still have a steam engine in Cherry Hinton. And somebody called Luffy Taver drove the steam engine. He did that for about 5 years when they had these processions. Mm. And had wonderful floats, all going, can you imagine that if you're sitting in Cherry Hinton High Street in the rush hour? Wonderful floats going round the village, they went a long way round. Marching bands, children had to walk for miles to get there. And they ended up on the wreck. And on the wreck day, there were an amazing number of things happening. One year, they had a marine band who just came up from Plymouth and played. The very first festival, they had skydivers dropped in. And one of those, I'm told, actually didn't make the wreck, but ended up where the water company is now.
But was there some great big splash at some point?
Well, I think they had to go and look for him.
Okay. it's quite interesting that the way that you've done this in Cherry Hinton, close to us here, of course, there's the Mill Road Winter Fair. I think there's talk about doing something in the summer at some point as well. And it seems to be that a lot of these festivals and events and feasts, which used to run and stopped for whatever reason. I thought there was one we were talking about Stourbridge Fair. That was it.
Oh,
there was
that was a brilliant one.
There was a recreation of it at the Leper Chapel.
Yes, that's right.
A couple of weekends ago. All these things stopped. People got fed up, weren't interested in. All of a sudden, like the restoration of the coffee shop, which people seem to forget that if they check out their history books, they were coffee shops years ago, and for some reason we didn't want coffee shops for 20 years, and then we did again. It's the same with these events.
I think so, yes. And now, I think people still want them, and so that's why it's gone on.
Probably didn't realise that they'd missed them, really, until somebody said, why don't we do this?
Well, that's right, and even last year when it was wet, people poured in, and that's what they've always said they wanted. When Kate and I got together, the thing everybody said was, yeah, it's lovely having this family fun day, but we want it back on the wreck. So... the last people who organised it, Tracy and Sharon, actually went into having a week's event, and that's what we do now. We have events every night and during the day.
So there's like a build-up, and then is it the big event which comes
that's
up on
set? Right.
So there's stuff which is already going on this week?
Absolutely. I noticed that at the first festival, they had a peal of bell. Well, we had bell ringing workshop last night and a craft party. And over the weekend, we had the Cherry Hinton duck race, which is amazing.
So that's gone, has it, the duck race?
I'm afraid so, you've missed it.
Who
yes.
won?
I don't know who won. Lots of people, because
okay.
lots of races.
Everybody wins.
Everybody
okay.
wins.
Prizes for everyone.
Yes, yeah. And Turbo Trust wins as well, because they're the charity that do it.
Yeah, that's also important, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Being able to support local charities too.
And it's all local organisations who are putting on things during the week. So what we're trying to say is that Cherry Hinton's a brilliant place to live. You have all this at your fingertips, which you can go to if you want, but people know it's there. We have drop-in sessions and all sorts. And that sort of goes back because, over those first... They had 2 days, and over the first 2 days, they had loads of people with stalls on the wreck and the floats. They were like the Townswomen's Guild, the Keep Fit, all sorts of things. So we're linking back with the past.
But the other thing from the past, which you mentioned there... which quite struck me, was the, I think you said community development officer. Was that the phrase you used?
Or, yes, that's right, yeah.
Because obviously there's one on the Mill Road, and Polly Pluvier has just taken up a position. This is council-funded. I don't know if the one you were mentioning was. Polly is doing Mitcham's Corner. Yeah. And it kind of strikes me that it's actually rather nice idea for everyone to have a community development officer for a few years.
It would
get
be
something going.
Nice.
And off we go. Mm.
We actually, I have to say, everybody doing this festival is a volunteer.
Mm.
We don't have, we have somebody for a few hours, but we don't actually have that sort of input. And yes, it would be very nice, I think.
I think we need to suggest it. We'll have a word with the mayor when he's opening the event on Saturday. He might be able to fix something for you. Becky, tell me about what's going to be happening this year.
So this year we've got a very exciting day lined up on Saturday. As Mo mentioned last year, we did have a little bit of rain, so we're hoping the weather's going to turn out for us.
Well, I think it'll be rubbish for the rest of the week, not that you know it at the moment, but Saturday is supposedly fine. And
fingers,
you know,
crossed. But we'd like to put a bit of a shout out to the sponsors. So we've got quite a few major sponsors of the festival day this year, which include Cambridge City Council, Marshalls, Dudley Developments, Arm have also supported us very well this year. Carter Jonas Bradshaw's. We've got the game.
Three sponsors of the price of one, isn't
yeah.
it?
We've got the Gamers Bus also sponsoring us, and they're also going to have a presence there on site on the day for the older children. And then we've got Ten Hats Printing Services and Countryside Properties. So we've been very lucky with the generosity of the sponsors this year, because as Mo mentioned, the Cherry Hinton Festival really runs on the goodwill of volunteers and sponsors. We don't really, you know, we don't charge admission on the day, so the event on the day is free for festival day, so everything we do is basically made possible by the sponsors and
that's
the
good, because that way you're not going to exclude anybody, because you know they, you know, don't want to pay the £5 or
exactly.
whatever by having it absolutely free.
Exactly.
That makes
it's
it a lot easier.
It's an inclusive community event, and that's what we've always wanted it to be. So
I was looking at some of the people who you have lined up to appear, and it's loads and loads of them. I don't know if you've got any favourites of interest to you. But
sure.
The Spitfire Flypast
yeah.
was the one that I particularly noticed, because there've been a lot of publicity around air shows and in the way, but that's there taking place.
Exactly, yes, we're quite excited about that. That will happen at 12:45, so keep your eyes on the skies.
And you know it's going
point.
To be 12:45, don't you? It's not going to be a second earlier or a second later.
Exactly. And we've got two kind of performance areas. So we've got the community performance arena, and one of the highlights of that will be a ceilidh at the end of the day where everyone can join in. So we're hoping that the crowds will get involved in that. And we've also got a music stage this year as well. So we're going to have some local bands performing there, including Dave Irving, who's also a friend of mine, and also the Arm Choir will be doing a stint on the music stage, Harmony. And
I never knew they had a choir.
Yes, I'm one of the members of the choir
okay.
as well. Yeah, so it's going to be quite a good community event with lots of local performers. And also a couple of bands, Root Notes, will be playing a mixture of jazz, blues, soul and rock. And then we've got, we're finishing up at the end of the day on the music stage with R Cubed, which also are a quite jazz themed band as well. So we've got a variety of music there. For those who are a bit more sporty, we've got quite a lot of sporting activities going on this year as well. So on the football pitch on the rec, we're going to be having sessions of sports that you might not necessarily have tried before, like korfball and American football. So again, it's an opportunity for people to just try something new.
It never ceases to amaze me how many different sports there are that people are taking part in around Cambridge. It's
exactly.
just it's tremendous, really.
Yeah. So
something I noticed down here, actually, you can bike too, we're familiar with them. But pedalled powered Skelextrix, that sounds good.
Yeah,
can I bring my cars along? I think I've still got them in the cupboard somewhere.
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be a wonderful day with lots of things to do. And then also not forgetting the children's marquee. So we have a marquee dedicated for the more younger children. So there's going to be Messy Play in there. Chaos are coming along to do a science roadshow.
Anna and Elsa from Frozen.
Anna and Elsa.
They must be expensive to get over.
Yes, we had to pay a premium for
them. I'm sure.
So they'll be doing some face painting, Anna and Elsa. So for all those Frozen fans out there, which I'm sure there are many, that's something for them too.
I'm very tempted to bring my niece along, actually.
I think it's going to be a really wonderful day with a lot for everyone. So
a Shepworth Wildlife Park. They're not bringing the whole park, are they?
I should hope not. No. We haven't got room. No, they'll certainly be bringing along a few of their animals for people to look at. I think one year, a couple of years ago, when it was on one of the school grounds, they bought a skunk, as I remember. Yeah. And
I suppose to encourage visitors, is it?
Yeah. So, yeah, they'll be along as well. So we've got quite a lot going on. And on the community performance arena, we've got Cherry Bombs doing a display, and there's the Splits Theatre Arts as well. The Cherry Hinton Community Choir will also be performing. So you've got two choirs on the day.
That's pretty good.
We've tried to schedule it so we don't clash with each other. So you can listen to one choir and then pop along to the other stage.
Yeah,
and
it's two choirs
the other,
in so. Competition with each other. Always, yeah. always dangerous. So I guess we should wrap up. But the details of when and where for people who do want to go along. And I guess it's free. You can, you know, if you happen to be a Cambridge City resident, you won't mind us coming down, will you?
Absolutely not. So it'll be on the Cherry Hinton Recreation Ground. I believe the day kicks off around midday, and as you mentioned, it's free. And if you want more details, we have a website.
Okay.
So that's www.cherryhintonfestival.org. So that's all one word, Cherry Hinton Festival.
Okay, having encouraged Cambridge City residents to come out and have a look, is there parking available at all?
So we're hoping that most people will either arrive on foot or use the public transport, because there won't be much parking around Cherry Hinton, but there are a few car parks. There's one on Colville Road, for example. People could use that, but it's not very big.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's fair enough. I always prefer to encourage people to use public transport or bicycles, but sometimes, you know, you can't. It's not always possible. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, look, thank you very much indeed to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Absolute pleasure. We've got one more song, which we'll do in a moment. We better do the travel first. But this one is, or will be?
So I chose Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. One of the reasons is because it's one of the songs the Arm Choir will be singing on the day. And the other reason, obviously, is because we're hoping the sun will come out for us.
Oh, of course it will. Don't be so silly. Of course it'll be sunshine. thank you very much to both of you.
Thank
Becky
you.
Hawker and Mo Child from the Cherry Hinton Festival.
Mid-mornings with Phil Rowe.
Cambridge 105.
Corkscrew Theatre Company was set up by mother and son, Leslie and Bobby Ford, and colleague Adam Bonner in Cambridge in 2014 to put on a production of Jason Robert Brown's Last 5 Years. Since then, they've have continued to be a platform for talented local theatre practitioners and have produced a number of small-scale shows, including the 2015 debut of Black Cat by local teacher and writer Jeff Page at Hotbed New Writing Theatre Festival at the Cambridge Junction. We're welcome to the studio this morning. In fact, Leslie, Bobby's not here. I don't know what you've done with Bobby today. He's probably out busy working.
Yeah, he has a day job.
He has a day job, don't we all, actually. And also, really nice and delighted to welcome to the studio as well, an actor. She's done a little bit of a dancing on the stage. And we said that was all before breakfast as well. So in the studio as well with us is a cast member of a forthcoming production, Amy Castledine.
Hello.
Is here as well. Hello, good morning to you. So production on next week is called Ordinary Days. We'll probably sort of start
it
on
is.
That. We'll all give you a little bit of background about Corkscrew as we go along. But first of all, it's going to be opening night next Wednesday at the AGC
yes,
Theatre on
indeed.
Park Street.
Yep.
Are rehearsals going well, I always ask?
They are going very well, yeah. We're looking forward to getting into the theatre now, into our right space. It's only a cast of four, but they do take up a lot of space, these actors, you know, when they start running about.
Even four of them. It's quite a small stage at the ADC. I've sort of worked there before. I've done sort of sound and light now, sort of behind the scenes and done little bits.
It's a nice space, though. It's a very friendly theatre to work in for amateur companies. It's the university theatre, as everybody knows, but they are very welcoming to amateur companies. So we wouldn't think of going anywhere else, really.
So production's on there at the moment. In fact, running it on Saturday evening. We were doing that on the What's Ons earlier on. When do they actually give you access to the theatre? I mean, presumably rehearsals are being done somewhere else at the moment.
Yes, a mixture of Leslie's house, which she's transformed into a rehearsal space. Where else do we perform?
We rehearsed the Larkham at the ADC again. There's a little studio theatre there that we can use sometimes.
It's called the Larkham.
The Larkham, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The back of the ADC Theatre?
Right inside the ADC Theatre, actually.
I didn't know that. I don't think it was there in my day.
No, maybe not. It is quite new, I think. But it is often used as a performance venue, too. It's very, it's a bit fringy. You feel like you're at Edinburgh when you're in there. But they do shows in there, don't they? But we also rehearse in there. But we actually get into the theatre on Sunday. That's when the magic starts to happen, and cleverer people than me start flying scenery and turning on lights.
Dimming lights up and down, testing this, sound checking on that sort of stuff, getting the sound effects on the stage, make sure they're right. Mm-hmm. Oh no, we need to go away because it isn't quite long enough. that sort of thing. Back in those days, it was tape, and you used to splice it and you used to cut it to get the sound effects right. And if it was wrong, you'd have to go home literally with a physical open spool of tape
to get the sound effects right, to get the right length. Now it's all digital. Goodness. I mean, it's all on a plate.
Wires and buttons. It's all about wires and buttons. As long as those buttons get pressed at the right time, then all is well.
So you've been cast into this one, Amy. You can also hear Amy Castledean talking to us here. You've actually done quite a bit of musical theatre here in Cambridge before, Amy.
I have, yes. And when I went off to London to train at Mountview in musical theatre, and one of my earliest professional shows was in fact with Leslie at the Arts Theatre, the Cambridge Arts Theatre, doing Anything Goes. They put on a summer production, one of their earliest productions that wasn't the pantomime, and Leslie was assistant directing on that.
Yeah, I got involved in that as a community volunteer. I thought I'd be putting flyers into envelopes, and imagine my surprise when I ended up assisting the director. So it's a bit of a baptism of fire, and I think the expression is steep learning curve.
And now with Corkscrew Theatre Productions, Leslie, it means you don't have to be the acting director anymore, or in fact do any acting, because you're doing all of the directing now, is that right?
Well, yeah, although I have to say that in this show, and doing small-scale shows as we do, and we invite the actors that we want to work with, it's actually much more of a collaboration than me being the boss and cracking a whip. But it's nice to sit back and watch and help them unpick the characters and tell the story properly. Because for me, that's what it's all about, actually, the story at the end of the day.
It's great. There is a lot of discussion.
Between the actors and the director?
Yes,
yeah.
Are you lucky enough to have a producer as well at this stage of the game?
That would be Bobby. That would be Bobby, who does all of that sort of stuff, yeah.
So that's quite interesting, having your son working for you and having it all with you as a producer.
Yeah, well,
it?
If anyone who's ever taught their child to drive will know that... no, it works really well, actually. He's a talented boy. I'm very proud of him. He's very musical, too. So he understands the genre, if you like.
So all he ever knew was due to mum. That's the way we should look at it, isn't it?
Well, maybe that. A music degree from King's College London might have helped a bit.
Just a little bit. So.
But let's go with mum. That's good.
So he's obviously done some musical production as well. He's performed as one of the musicians in some of the previous productions that you've had.
Bobby musical directed out last year. Wow. He's also trod the boards as a teenager, a little bit with Sawston Youth Drama. So, yeah, he's got enough of a background to know what he's doing.
You live fairly close to Sawston in Stapleford, so it's very easy for you to get over to Sawston. They've got a very thriving, vibrant drama organisation. I know Calvin Reynolds is now retired, but he's head of drama at Sawston Village College. He's done so much wonderful work with the students there. And some have gone on to become professional actors.
Yes, they have.
Left Sawston and become of great positive notoriety. Yeah. Moving on in this world as well. So I know you did a couple of years ago something we promoted at the time but didn't get you in on at the time, Leslie, was The Witches of Eastwick, which you did back in 2013 with the children at Sawston.
It wasn't with the children, actually. Now, this is interesting. Sawston Youth Drama is this huge beast of a theatre machine that works with children from year 7 in various age groups right up. But lots of people that work there now as leaders wanted to get back on stage because they said, we're dishing out all of these instructions, it's about time we took some, see if we still can. So they invited Bobby and myself to musical direct and direct their first 3 shows, actually, and which is, at least it was the 3rd of those shows. So it's grown-ups.
On the back of this, presumably then, Leslie, you and Bobby and Adam decided to form Corkscrew Theatre Productions last year.
We did.
Yeah, as a sort of bouncing off.
Well, we wanted to do shows that weren't great big musicals really, and there are lots of companies in Cambridge that have kind of got that nailed, and we've all been in them, and so we've directed them, Bobby and I, Oklahoma and Guys and Dolls and all that sort of stuff, and we wanted to do lesser known, newer stuff, and we wanted to work with people that we pulled in rather than being asked to direct something, then being given a bunch of people. We wanted to say, what do we want to do and who do we want to work with? So that was the ethos for it, really. That was the starting point.
And with 4 in the cast, you've all got to pretty much bellow out, haven't you, Amy? Because with only 4 of you, you've got to fill up that theatre.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really interesting, actually, because last year when we did the last 5 years, it was just me and Steve Nicholson in the cast, so just a 2-hander. So there was a lot of pressure to
double the work,
fill the space
over 4
yeah,
people.
Absolutely. So, yeah, pressure off a little bit with 2 extra people and more people to bounce off. It's fantastic. And everyone's got a very... each character is very eccentric in their own way, but pretty soon you realise they're not two dimensional. There's a lot going on with each person, so the more we've got to bounce off each other, the better, really.
Written by a rising American star playwright, Adam Guan, Ordinary Days, following the chain of events that turn the average day of four New Yorkers into something quite extraordinary. So you're doing it in a Bronx-style New York accent all the way through?
I'd say probably more general American.
Okay.
Yeah, it's suggested that a few of the characters have moved to New York, which gives us a bit of leeway with the accent.
So you could be Midwest or over the East Side. The people have sort of gone back East, as the Americans call it.
Yeah, exactly.
We won't give too much of the plot away because we want everyone to go along and see it. Is it the first time it's been performed in the UK, do we know?
Ooh, good question.
No, I don't think so. No, I think it's very popular show with student groups and such like. These song cycles tend to be quite popular for small companies. But I haven't seen it recently. It's often at Edinburgh, I think. But it's great, because what I like about the four characters in this is that they are completely accessible. There are elements of all of them in all of us. So you'll find yourself in there somewhere. You might not be one of the characters, but you will share something with all of them.
And you certainly will have experienced something that each of them are going through.
The depressive side, the obsessive side, the enthusiastic side,
leaving
the over-the-top
side. Leaving your homework
on
the bus. Yeah. That's quite a theme, your homework on the bus.
Having a boyfriend move in, quite stressful.
And realise it might not have been such a good thing.
Possibly,
like
you have
that
to wait and see. Yeah.
How many songs are there? How many musical numbers?
Ooh, good question. It's sung through and it runs for about 85 minutes.
Sung all the way through?
Yeah.
There's no actual sort of stop for dialogue at all?
No. The music is quite speech-like. So in a normal musical, when you'd reach that point of such heightened emotion that you have to break into song, where there would be dialogue in a more sort of old-fashioned musical, if you like, that's built into the music. So it's quite chatty, and then it'll get a bit more lyrical when the emotion calls for it.
Amy, you and your fellow performers, if you're doing it, it's 85 minutes of this, there's no intermission?
Yeah.
You'd be exhausted on the end of this.
You'd get on a roll.
You'd have a good voice on the night.
Yeah. Well, we've been practicing, warming up quite a long time.
So. And a live sort of orchestra in the pit, so to speak, small though it might be, or
Just Joe on the piano, Joe Griffiths.
Wow. Okay.
On the piano. Holding it all together.
That way, it's more talent. The fact that you can flow for 85 minutes doing this. So you're ready with all your lines. Got it all in your head now.
Yeah. I think they're pretty cemented. We hope.
And you auditioned for this. When was it you sort of saw this coming over the horizon then, Amy?
Actually, it was, as Leslie was saying, because they can sort of pick and choose who they want to work with depending on what they've chosen to do, the idea was just sort of really floated and said, would you be interested in taking this role? So it's always nice just to be invited.
Yeah. We were laughing the other day and saying that The Black Cat was a one-man show. The last 5 years was two people. This is four. So we're looking at
8, 16, 32.
Yeah. So anyone's got any ideas for people with 128 in the cast?
<You definitely,
laughs> let us know.
Well, you won't be at the ADC 30. You'll probably be over in the University West, the West 30.
Oh, yeah.
West
we go Corn Exchange. We'll just go Corn Exchange.
Yeah. The biggest one of all, I suppose. You always think of it moving up to the Cambridge Junction. With respect to them all, but obviously its size matters in the end, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And maybe.
Do you know what? Let's book Wembley.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Just go for it. Yeah. So next thing you'll be in the Hollywood Bowl or something over in the States.
Yeah, so if anyone out there would like to fund this adventure,
so you never know who might be listening.
We were talking about the Edinburgh Festival, the festivals as it's called, Fringe, call it what you will. Obviously very successful, many, Viva in some, they went out there this year, and other Cambridge groups were involved. Ever been up there yourself, either of you?
Never, I've never been. Never been to see anything, I've never been in anything up there. I think timing-wise, I've never been available, but I'm told it's something that ought to be done.
So, Amy, is it the professional life for you now as an actor? Is it what you do full-time?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I'm starting rehearsals for the Thursford Christmas Spectacular a week after we finish this.
Up in Norfolk, yes, among all the theatre organs and steam engines and all
exactly,
that stuff.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
It packs huge numbers of people, right? Robert Wolf still playing the
he
keyboard
does in
up there?
In the summer, he does, yeah.
Oh, right, so you've got the winter season there?
Yes.
Bit of singing, dancing?
Yep, singing, dancing, jazz handing, glitter, sequins.
Do you know, I went to see it last year. Amy invited me to go and watch it, and it is quite extraordinary. It is take Christmas and bottle it, climb in the bottle with it, and that is Thursford. It's just
shake it up
quite incredible.
The lights, the atmosphere, the coach loads of people that go to Thursford.
It's amazing.
You know, trek up towards Fakenham if people want to know where that is. And take, I guess they're taking bookings already. If it isn't,
oh, yeah,
they're
yeah.
already full.
It's yeah, few tickets left, but yeah, they sell out pretty early in the year.
Nice to know that you're getting some work then, Amy. So you're all ready for this one. It's a run at the ADC Theatre on Park Street from next Wednesday. That's the 23rd through till Saturday, the 26th of September. It's called Ordinary Days. And it stars. Well, I say it stars well, alongside your the other three colleagues. Would you like to name the other actors who are involved with this one?
Just so they will get a mention. Steve Nicholson, Rosie Wells, and Mark McCormack.
With accompaniment on the piano. And sound and lighting, of course.
Yeah.
Joe Griffiths is our musical director and accompanist, and the Penguin Club of Cambridge are, of course, in charge of everything technical.
They do so much for the ADC Theatre's performances, and they do it all for free as well. We should mention what the Penguin Club is, which is a group of, by far from amateur by nature, but they are not paid to do this, and they set up your sound and your light, and they get your props together so they don't fall down or wobble too much, and get this all set up for you.
And much more, set design and building and painting. Sarah Phelps is our deputy stage manager and our set designer. She's busy at the ADC workshop every evening this week.
And they do the electrics, and they're tireless. And well done to the Penguin. They don't get enough mentions, but we try to mention them here, the Penguin Club that probably help you with all these events as well. Fantastic. So the Ordinary Days, as I say, you can get tickets at adctheatre.com through the box office there as well if you want to go along and see the performance. Have you had any news yet of how the tickets might be selling?
It's a hard sell, a four-hander of an unknown musical show. And the tickets are trickling now. People don't buy their tickets far enough in advance for our liking. So if you are thinking of coming, do book it so that we know that you're coming. It's a hard sell, but I wish more people would go and see things that they don't know, because this is an extraordinary little musical. Mm. A great story. And I'm not being too biased in saying that do come, because you will love it. Our performers are extraordinary. It is absolutely brilliant. Come and join us.
It's comedy, it's funny, it's musical.
I was about to say, I always think, it is funny. What do you want from a night at the theatre? I personally want to laugh, and I want to be moved, I want to be affected, and there is no way you won't do those two things at this show.
Amy, that's amazing. And the intimacy as well that the ADC Theatre offers, sometimes even over and above the Arts Theatre. Although we love them both, and we like them both to be here in the city, and long may them both prosper. But it's fantastic. Lovely to see you both. Any ideas, Leslie, what you might do next in terms of a production, or is that all still under the wrappers?
No, there are no revelations that I can make. I'll let you in on... You will be the first to know. Shall I say that? You will be the first to know when we decide.
Publicity at Cambridge105.fm, and that's the same for any listeners if they want to get their particular feature on the mid-morning shows as one of the feature. But our guest this morning from Corkscrew Theatre Productions, we met there, of course, Amy Castledean. Good luck. Break a leg, as they say.
Thank you very much.
Have a good time on stage. Hopefully you get lots of people coming along. And Leslie Ford as the director as well.
Thank you.
Have a good show. And we look forward to seeing you again when something else comes up on here in the city. Thanks for that.
Mid-mornings with Lee Chambers. Cambridge
105. That's Take It Easy by the Eagles. Playing that because I was lucky enough earlier this week to talk to Danny Vaughan. He's the lead singer of the Ultimate Eagles. They're a tribute band. They're playing the Corn Exchange this evening. When I spoke to him down the line, I reminded him that the Ultimate Eagles had played to almost 250,000 people worldwide and clocked up more than 2 million hits on YouTube. So I asked him about the Eagles, what it was about them that he thought that continued to draw people.
Well, the thing that's interesting to me is not only does it continue to draw people, but it continues to draw new people. At our shows, it's not just people remembering the good old days. It's people that the music's been passed on to. And I think certain bands manage a legacy. I'm always pretty amazed by it. Obviously, as you can tell, I'm the token American in the band. So I grew up with this. But I'm fascinated to see on Eagles websites the amount of people that have logged in on the Eagles Chinese fan page and things like that. And you just think, how is this music translating to these people? How are they? But I think it's Americana. It comes right down to it. And I think people are fascinated by Americana, and it represents that for sure.
Could you put it down to lyrics or tune, or you just think it's a fascination with the whole ethos and persona of the Eagles?
Yeah, probably the latter. I mean, it's all of it, because, you know, the Eagles weren't just a great band that put together, you know, some classic American songs. They pretty much defined it, and they did a few things that no band had ever done, which was crossover. That's a term that gets used a lot these days. But the Eagles were the first band I ever knew that was being played on rock radio and on country radio and even on easy listening radio. So they weren't readily definable. The Rolling Stones have done it over the years in a similar fashion. I think it's just part of being great writers the way they are, is that they explored various avenues, and it just seems whatever they touch turns to gold, bless them.
And how would you define yourself as the ultimate Eagles? Are you happy with that term, tribute band?
Yeah, we kind of shiver a little bit at the term tribute band. We're an Eagles show. What the difference is, I believe, is that it's not just a bunch of guys who got together and said, we really love the Eagles, lads. Let's get together every Sunday, practice the songs in our garage, and we'll do this. The Ultimate Eagles are a group of very, very experienced musical professionals. We've got the bass player from Thunder, you know, internationally known rock band. I'm the lead singer for an American band called Taiketto that's still touring and playing festivals and all that. We've got guys in the band who are writing scores for the BBC. These are very, very schooled professionals. And so we put a lot of effort into, we want to make the show fun, but we also want to make it as honorable to the Eagles as possible. We're kind of sticklers about trying to get every note right. Nobody can, but I think we're trying harder than anybody else.
Because the term tribute band, it covers the likes of Bjorn again, you know, people who dress up as the characters. You don't go that far, do you?
No, that's right. We don't. We have a bit of fun. We'll put on some 70s gear once in a while to sort of represent when they were, of course, you know, at the height of their powers. Especially if we're doing a set that particularly involves that era. But overall, no, I don't, you know, pretend I'm Don Henley or any of that sort of thing. We swap off. Certain guys' voices are more perfectly suited to represent certain guys. I tend to sing more of the Don Henley stuff, but one of the other gentlemen that's right up front with me, Michael Lawrence, can easily sing all that, as well as the Glenn Frey stuff that he does, and he's covering all the really high stuff that Randy Meisner used to do. And then Christian Phillips is filling in on the right side, and he's doing a lot of the Timothy B. Schmidt vocals, which are nigh on impossible for 99% of the rest of us.
And you mentioned them being the height of their powers, as it were, in the 70s. Is that their golden era as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think it defined the time. The Hotel California album was just it. I mean, anybody that was from 15 to 25 in that era when that album came out, they know they were getting stoned to that album. Absolutely. It was an important part of the culture, and it was a commentary on the culture as well. Songs like Life in the Fast Lane and Hotel California were really describing what was happening on the West Coast, which of course is where they went to first make it.
So who comes to see your gigs? Because you're talking about it's talking to people in the 70s and the early 80s. Do you get younger people coming along? Does it resonate with them as well?
Yeah, it really does. And I'm always pleased to see that. It's like I say, I feel it's a legacy and it gets passed down. I mean, the same way one of my friends is a great rock drummer, just took his 8-year-old son to see AC/DC. It's a legacy, you know, and it just... There are certain bands that, even though it's kind of in our DNA to avoid the music our parents listen to, we do get curious, don't we? You know, it's just, oh, okay, what are they so fired up about that for? And then it'll connect. And I think, in the end, great songs do connect. And that's, I mean, the Eagles have that in spades.
And you mentioned there that you're all musicians in different spheres as well. Indeed, you're all very successful musicians. How do you balance those two areas of your life? Do you have an Eagles head, as it were, and then another musician's head?
Yeah, actually, that's the best way to describe it I've heard yet. Yeah, I do switch heads. I mean, I'm getting ready to do two shows this weekend, and I have to sit and think, all right, some of these songs I know pretty well after 6 years or so of doing them, but you never want to be supremely confident. You always want to review a little bit, because one of the things that is great about performing this music is it's deceptively complicated. A song like Take It Easy, everybody thinks it's three chords and off you go. It's really not. They're very, very clever, and there's constant chord changes going on, chord substitutions. Instead of just sticking with the same two or three they started with, they're always kind of expanding. So you got to be kind of on your toes. So yeah, I'll sit the day before a show and do a quick review of especially the stuff that I'm singing lead on to make sure that I've got all those words in my head, because they're an awful lot of words.
That's great that you're still finding things in it, you know, because you're playing the same songs presumably night after night, and you're still finding new twists in them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all do it. We all kind of go back. I think that may be good or bad about the Ultimate Eagles, but we've got a serious case of OCD musicians, and we all of us tend to go back to, hey, you know, I was listening to that, and all I can think of is, why would you be listening to that on your day off? You know? But we do, and also because we also record our own CDs doing Eagle songs, something that fascinated me, but that people really, really like. They see the band, and if they like us, they think, well, gosh, have you recorded it? Yeah, we have. You know, great that you want it. And there's another level of attention that you have to pay. If you're sitting in a studio, now you're trying to replicate songs that perhaps they spent months on in the studio, and that gets really nitpicky. But I think, again, these guys that I work with, they're all such good session and studio players that it was all put together very well. We have kind of our master mixer and a gentleman named Tim Hamill who really concentrates on things like, oh, listen, there's a phase shifter on that cymbal there. All right, we'll put that on. So thank God somebody has the patience to listen to all of that and make it all sound good.
And is it important to you that you do replicate? You're never tempted to put your own twist on it?
No. I mean, for performance sake, we try to keep it very, very close to the original. We have done some change-ups and things like last year, our show, our first set was completely taken from the Hell Freezes Over set. And that was, of course, variations, acoustic renditions of, you know, like the Spanish flamenco guitar version of Hotel California and things like that. And it also gave us a chance to shake up the set list and play some stuff that we'd never played. But no, as far as we've done a few things where we've put our own twist on it. Last year we released an acoustic CD, and it's pretty stripped down stuff. And there are a few songs on there that I've actually never heard tried acoustically, like One of These Nights. And so there, yeah, we flex a little bit of our own muscle just to see what we can do.
And have you any idea what the Eagles themselves think of your work?
You know, I've been terrified to find out because I'm not sure that they're the most that they necessarily get the flattery of it. However, I can say kind of, I can't tell you from where, but I have it from a really great source, a promoter that we know, who met with Don Henley at one point. They've been friends, and said he was trying to get Don Henley to play a couple gigs he was interested in putting on, and he finally looked at Don and said, you know, Don, the problem is I can't afford you. You guys are too expensive. And Don Henley said, I am told, well, you ought to check out this band called the Ultimate Eagles.
Wow, no, really? You're being recommended by an eagle.
Yeah. Now, if I can just get him to put that down in writing, I'm made. That's it.
It doesn't get better than that, really, does it?
No, that was such a fantastic thing to be told. I sincerely hope it's true.
And so, finally, Danny, if I'm going to send you to a desert island, we have a program in this country called Desert Island Discs, where somebody's sent to a desert island with their choice of music, but they can only choose one record right at the very end. If I have to send you to a desert island with just one Eagles track, which one would it be?
Oh, wow. That's painful. Let's see. If I have to choose just one. This last year, we've started doing one that we haven't done for years, and we're still doing it in this year's set, and I enjoy it immensely. So with a difficult question like that one, I'm going to go with Wasted Time.
Wasted Time.
One that I get the pleasure of singing.
That's yours, then. Thank you ever so much for being on Cambridge 105.
Oh, thank you. We're very much looking forward to playing the Corn Exchange. It'll be our first time. We've been We've done the Cambridge Rock Festival a couple of times, and people have been really great and receptive. So Coin Exchange is one of those rooms in the UK that's got a bit of weight to it. So we're really excited about being there.
It has, and I hope you get a chance to explore the city while you're here as well.
Yeah, it would be nice. It rarely happens, but if I get lucky, I will.
Oh, he was lovely. That's Danny Vaughan, lead singer of the Ultimate Eagles.
Connecting our city.
Cambridge 105.
Now on DAB Digital Radio.